Sitting in a living room, sitting on the porch. It's your words, gonna light that torch. Tell it in a city park, tell it in a bar, tell it in the backseat of your grandma's car. No tales too pure, our failures lure. The poor house sure wants to hear what's bubbling in your brain.
Welcome to Tales from the Poorhouse, the show where writers write from a prompt. They do it in an hour, they revise for a half an hour, and then they're ready to go. The prompt tonight was International Falls, On the Edge of International Falls. A couple of things that you might also hear in the story is a banjo quartet and also a festival of smells. So we're all sitting in the house. We're ready to go. Welcome. Casey Ulysses Fab is the stunningly attractive Cheetos connoisseur out of eastern Iowa. He used to collect stamps as a child, and as a teenager, he pioneered the East Iowa deathcore subgenre of heavy metal. Casey.
Well, most people think of International Falls, they think of the skull-scraping cold, the fierce hockey rivalry between the American and Canuck squads, the sight of the horrendous 1862 lawn dart disaster. But rarely does a great North festival of smells come to mind, which is unfortunate to say the least. Where else can you experience a sweet sense of peach cobbler minus the mess? Burger King cologne minus the grease. New car spray minus a new car. And Taco Bell eating dragons minus the fiery discomfort. I'll tell you, nowhere. International Falls has been the yearly destination for millions of us scent seekers and scent dealers. My name is Clarence K. Roosterhouse, and smells are my game. I have a scent laboratory just outside Cedar Rapids, Iowa, which has become a hotspot of innovative olfactory experimentation. For the past 18 years, I had been chasing down the elusive Hubert Chicken Foster Scent of the Year Award. Last year, my Roy Rogers in Asana took second place, which, as we all know, is just the first loser. This year, I was going big. I'd been workshopping it around the Midwest, perfecting it along the way. I called it Herd of Cats in a Flaming Strawberry Field. It was to be a big exhibit. I had 30 felines prancing around 100 jars of strawberries with bonfire and strawberry-scented candles I made myself using a secret blend of herbs and spices lacing the scene. It may not sound like much on paper, but it was a sight and smell to behold. When I arrived in International Falls, I went straight to the exhibition site, an open field a mile west of the city. There I ran into Horace Goosenobbins, my arch nemesis. Last year it was his rodeo cheese log with jet fuel that edged out my own smell.
Hey there, Clarence. What you got this year? John Elway in a Swedish bath?
Shut up, Horace. I've got something big, I said. Something bigger than you, me, this entire festival.
We'll see about that, he replied.
The field was divided up into 15 by 15 foot square sections divided by yellow and green shower curtains. This was supposed to help prevent liquid and scental cross-contamination. I found my plot and began unloading the candles and the strawberries and the cat carriers full of cats. When I was done, I went to my hotel to meditate and focus on my strategy. I knew I'd have to light the candles from front to back in order to allow a gradual building of smell, unlike Horace's wall of smell approach. Then I would unleash the cats back to front to create a swirl of olfactory bliss. This was my plan, my key to the nose of tears, the scent industry's boys club, the who's who of olfaction elite. This has been a dream of mine since I was a child, and I was determined to get it this year. The next morning, I woke up and made my way to the field. Horace stood outside my scent section.
Good morning, Clarence, he said.
He had a smirk on his face. He peeked behind the curtain.
I just don't know about this, Clarence.
Shut off, Horace, I said. I pushed him aside and opened my curtain. Oh no, I shouted. The cats are out of their carriers. All my hard work is ruined. I glared at Horace. This was his doing, no doubt.
Better hurry up, Clarence.
He pointed at the next sentence section. The judges were just finishing up, and I was next. As Horace backed away, I ran aside and began lighting the candles. The cats followed me around, curious of what I was doing. I finished and closed the curtain behind me just as the judges approached.
Mr. Roosterhouse, a pleasure. What are you presenting this year?
The lead judge scratched his black bushy mustache. An olfactory filter, we called it. It's, I said, I can smell something. Something heavy, meaty. It's called Herd of Cats in a Flaming Strawberry Field. Horace smirked behind the judges. The lead judge nodded.
Very well, let's have us a smell.
I opened the curtain, was rocked with horror. The candles were all knocked over, the strawberries ablaze. The cats, 30 flaming felines, stormed out and down through the field. Horace laughed. I fell to my knees. The judges raised their nose in the air.
It's light,
one said.
It's airy like a springtime breeze, said another.
And yet it has a dark robustness reminiscent of Gruber Swanson's honey-roasted astronaut,
said the lead judge. Honey-roasted astronaut was my favorite scent as a child. They turned to each other and whispered. I strained to hear them, but after a moment they turned back to me.
You know, we don't approve of the presentation of the scent, they said. But I do say this is the most delightful display of olfaction since the golden age of the early 80s. Contest over.
I howled in joy as they handed me the Hubert Chicken Foster Scent of the Year Award. I looked through tears of joy at my flaming cats of fire heading to the edge of International Falls. Those burning fur balls had done it, by golly. I was now the big man on campus, the champion scentmeister at this hugely important contest. My dreams, they were finally a reality.
Ooh. Thanks, Casey.
Should do it.
Hi, my name is Jeff. I host the show. I got an icy heart and the will to end it, Johnny says. You got a natty light and a hand to bend it, I say back. Johnny pulls the truck over to the side of the road. Snow falls. These dark trees bend over us. You ever think about International Falls, he asks. No. What International Falls means, he asks. I sip my natty light, delicious. Holy, holy nutcrack, look at that buck, Johnny shouts. A giant deer or maybe a moose crosses the road at the edge, at the end of our headlights. I don't see anything, I say. Here's what I know. It takes 4 damn pickers to play in a banjo quartet. Here's another thing. Peanut allergies can be violent. Johnny picks me up on a Tuesday night. It's the 6-month anniversary of last summer's famous Festival of Smells. International Falls, he says. Good one, I nod. The Festival of Smells took place in the woods. It was sponsored by Lilac, a hippie fragrance company. The entire company was actually a staff of one, Lilac, hippie. Lilac made her own scents from natural products. Owing to the sincere lack of organized recreation in our trailer park, just about all 147 of us were there. Polly Johnson wasn't. He was in the cities, headlining a gig, picking his banjo. His illegitimate daughter, Bianca, picked next to him on that city stage. Johnny and I were at the Festival of Smells, not on that city stage. Back out in the woods, Johnny says, "That buck, or moose, come to get us. Take us where we belong." Pass me a natty, you fatty, I say. Enough of your rhymes. The music died, Johnny tells me. We were to headline the Festival of Smells. The International Falls Banjo Quartet, which sounds like a big deal, and it might have been until those splinters, Polly Johnson and his illegitimate daughter, Bianca, left for the bright lights by themselves. "We're going on the road," Polly informed us. "And you two natty suckers ain't." I had kissed Bianca's illegitimate lips 2 nights before. What about the smell festival? Johnny cried. Wana mana bana ba ba, Polly responded. Then Johnny punched my nose. Back out in the truck in the woods, I say, didn't see no freaking deer, brother. We ain't brothers, Polly says. The Nelson twins was. International Falls, I say. The highlight of the Festival of Smells was to be us, the International Falls Banjo Quartet, engaged in smell tests between songs. We were to guess fragrance ingredients to further entertain an already furiously entertained crowd of rowdies. The Nelson brothers were banjo pickers from Uptown International Falls. They agreed to replace those bastard Johnsons, Polly and Bianca. Hell yeah, Ricky Nelson had said. We love the International Falls Banjo Quartet, when we asked him to join us. Especially that foxy chicken, Danny Nelson cried over the phone, hee-hawing and audibly slapping skin with Ricky, his brother. They were quite upset when they showed up for the gig and realized me and Johnny were the ones they'd be playing with. Sack of nuts, no, Danny cried. I'm gonna take that deer a natty, Johnny says, out in the woods. An offering of my soul. Soft turds, ring your bowl, I mumble. Shut it, Johnny says. During the sniff test, the Nelson brothers died. Lilac, the hippie fragrance maker, had crushed peanuts together with rose petals, a concoction she called pea rose. The Nelsons were allergic to peanuts and to pea rose. They swelled up and died on stage. The headlines read, International Falls, that's all, with a picture Lilac took on her telephone showing the Nelsons falling. Johnny opens the truck door. Johnny screams, you can't win if you're in International Falls, falling down all the damn time. International failures, I say. I'm going to bring that deer a natty, Johnny nods. He grabs a can and disappears into the woods. I didn't see no deer, I say. At this moment, 700 miles to the south, Polly and his illegitimate daughter, Bianca, play on televisions of a million people. Public television calls them mountain folk, but that's BS. They're from the falls. A moment later, Johnny emerges from the woods. He's riding the most majestic hooved animal I have ever seen. I leap from the cab. I leap down the road towards them. I fell up, Johnny cries. I fell up. International Falls, man. International Falls. Thank you. Next up, we have a great song by Chris Koza and Stephanie Wilbur-Ash, performed by Chris Koza. He and his band, Rogue Valley, put out 4 CDs in the last year. Chris.
Oh, would like to hold you as a guide. Polaris bride, my rationale. But my falls don't fall that small. Darling girl, darling doll, my falls are international. Blinded by peripherals, I pull away my great big hood, and what I saw is what you saw. The edge of international.
Melody Heidi is a second-year MFA student at MNSU. When she's not... kiting?
Riding.
Oh.
She does kite.
What a strange thing to do all the time. When she's not writing, she bakes cookies or plays Super Mario World on Super Nintendo. Melody.
It is January, late January, but it feels like March. Earlier this evening, we stepped out under a pink sunset. Chilled but hopeful for spring, I quoted, at the earliest ending of winter in March. It's from this poem I love, by a famous writer whose name I can't recall, but reminds me of another poem that begins, the name of the author is the first to go. Two winters ago, I began memorizing poetry. I worked as a baker at a small coffee shop, and I was trying to figure out graduate school, house buying, babies. 4:30, I awoke before businessmen and childless housewives. I made scones, I baked bread. I hung poetry on the refrigerator doors and muttered repeatedly, a chorister whose C preceded the choir. And I don't know what a prayer is, I do know how to pay attention. These lines kept the darkness at the kitchen windowsill, the cold isolated to the edge of International Falls. There was always the smell of butter and eggs, the warmth of the stove, the idea of a host of daffodils. Out the window, the city glowed, reflected red, pink, orange. A Minnesota winter day is concrete and alabaster, but it's bookended by startling colors without names. Blood orange red, azalea pink, or rather, pink like the roses your boyfriend gave you before he was your boyfriend, before he said, I love you. In the morning, there was always yellow, yellow of yolks and butter and sugar cream together. I called it Easter yellow. Spring was in the bakery, and when I walked outside mid-afternoon, bundled and squinted gopher-like under the muted sun, I knew somewhere a bird chirped, a grasshopper hummed, four frat boys were tuning their banjos, waiting for brides to take their groom's hand and waltz around an abandoned barn. There are certain things I want to taste, poetry, the moon at its fullest, after the sunset blue, a chocolate cardamom scone right out of the oven, the knowledge that it all turns out okay.
Next up is Dave Resch, who has, to his knowledge, never written a first-person story before today. Dave.
All right. I think I killed my neighbor last week. I never saw a body, and there hasn't been anything in the news, but I haven't seen him since last Friday night, when he went over the edge of International Falls. It was really his fault, all things considered. I mean, at worst, I'm just an accomplice. My neighbor, Ernie, was a pretty far-out-there guy. I think he believed every conspiracy theory he ever heard. He was up all night, almost every night, in his shed, doing noisy things I didn't understand. It sounded like he was building a spaceship out there, which wasn't too far from the truth, as it turned out. He also owned five cats, and had produced a popular banjo album in 1963 with three of his buddies. All four of them went to Vietnam, and apparently Ernie came back with a few loose screws. I never got the details, but it's not too hard to believe. Anyway, for the last month, up until last week, the racket from Ernie's shed had finally reached the point where I couldn't take it anymore. And then, the night before I was going to call the police and report the disturbance, it stopped. For the first time in the 9 years we had been neighbors, there wasn't a peep from Ernie's shed. And then, the next evening, I noticed a coincidental new help wanted ad on the local Craigslist. Time travel, it said. I have a working time machine. I know it sounds implausible, but it's true, and it requires two people to operate. You must be serious and able to lift at least 150 pounds. If you are going with me, you must find someone to watch my cats. We will be leaving on September 30th and returning on October 2nd. I have business in June of 1967. Please respond only if you are serious and your head is less than 64 centimeters in circumference. I walked over to Ernie's because at that point I had to satisfy my ultimately morbid curiosity. I had never actually been on Ernie's property before. Even approaching his house, it was a festival of smells, you might say. Cats, raw sewage, Mexican food, other mysterious odors, all wafted from his open windows. Ernie met me at the door. "John," he said cheerfully. My name wasn't John. And it still isn't. "Did you by chance build a time machine?" I asked. Ernie had a crazy glint in his eye. "How did you know?" "Oh, you saw..." Ernie, I didn't really know what to say at that point. "You're here to help me, aren't you, John?" "My name doesn't even start with J." I said, "Look, if you're skittish, I understand. You don't have to go with me to 1967. I still need someone to help haul the capsule up to the falls. I have to be in free fall to engage the temporal drive, you see." "Free fall, eh?" I said. I wasn't convinced. "Free fall," said Ernie. "You cut the tether at the signal, and I'll go over. Piece of cake." I looked at him. He was 70, probably, and he obviously had no family and a tenuous grip on reality. Or maybe he was a genius inventor. But I just wanted some lasting peace and quiet for once. The only downside I could see was being stuck with his cats. "So?" asked Ernie. "Sure," I said. I never found his capsule afterwards, but I'm certain it was destroyed on impact. It wasn't the sturdiest time machine.
Okay. Next we have Eileen Sather. She's from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. She wholeheartedly believes that Harrison Ford's best movie is What Lies Beneath.
Sticking with it.
Eileen.
Right now, standing at the edge of International Falls is a young boy wearing green wellies and a heavy winter coat. His name is Oliver. He is 10 years and 11 months old. He has 42 freckles on the right side of his face, 3 pairs of Captain Planet pajama pants, and 0 friends. Well, you could count his parents, but he doesn't. You might count his grandma Jerry, and he probably would. So one, Oliver has one friend. But he's not lonely, and he is not at the edge of the falls to jump, to make some kind of dramatic exit, to shout goodbye, cruel world, he saw that once on a Lifetime television movie, and leap from his perch, green wellies and all. No, nothing like that. Oliver is simply thinking. Calculating, really, counting. Numbers are his friends, and numbers are infinite. So really, Oliver has infinity friends. It is cold in Minnesota, at the edge of International Falls, the kind of cold that freezes the boogers in your nose and makes them harden. Oliver swipes at his nose with a bare hand. His mother has forgotten to buy him mittens. She is always forgetting the practical things when they're on the road, mittens and batteries and hotel reservations. But she remembered his favorite, cheddar cheese flavored Chex Mix this time. Oliver has some in his pocket now. He likes them, but they turn his fingers orange. Oliver is craning his neck over the edge of the falls, near an orange sign with the ridiculous image of a stick figure slipping over the edge and falling to a painful death, crushed by rocks and water. Oliver is wondering how long it would take for the stick figure man to reach his inevitable fate in the water below. Oliver is factoring in distance and wind velocity and the weight of the stick figure man. The last part is giving him some trouble. "Hello, young man. What are you doing over there?" An elderly lady is speaking to Oliver. "Equations," he says to her, annoyed. He starts to count again. The old lady laughs and comes closer. "What kind of equation?" she asks. "The mathematical kind," he says. "I see. Are your parents mathematicians too?" Oliver looks at the old lady. She has 7 wrinkle lines beneath each of her eyes. Oliver has no wrinkles beneath either eye, but he does have a thick curtain of black curling lashes surrounding both eyes. His grandma Jerry calls them his lady killers. No, he says, Oliver's parents are not mathematicians. Oliver's parents make up one half of a traveling banjo quartet named the Band Jonas Brothers. Right now, the Band Jonas Brothers are performing at the Festival of Smells in town. The old lady continues to stare at Oliver as he ponders his equations on the edge of International Falls. How did you get here? She asks, her hands stuffed into the pockets of her quilted old lady coat. The bus, he says. Oliver digs into his own pocket and pulls out some cheddar cheese Chex Mix. You remind me of my grandson, the old quilted coat-wearing, wrinkly-eyed lady says. Do you mind if I stay with you a while? Oliver shrugs. Two minds are maybe, probably, mostly better than one. How much do you think a stick figure weighs? He asks the lady. He thinks having another friend is always good, too. But then again, infinity plus one is still infinity.
Danny Purcell is a first-year grad student at Minnesota State University. She just invented a beverage, a delightful spritzer composed of red wine and Pabst Blue Ribbon. She can't stop complaining about how darn cold it is in Minnesota.
This is called For the Love of Banjos. When on top, at the apex, just looking down at everything, you notice the height, association, lens, format, landscape, everything, which seems crumbling and gray and serene and indifferent to your very existence. Order and disorder, continuing motion despite everything beneath it. 18-wheelers crawl 71, chugging through the darkness, snow like flashing in the glare of headlights, spitting smoke turns frozen in the air and collapses ice to pavement. I'm gonna jump, Cricket shouts, leaning over the fire tower railing, beaming brightly below at the lethargic city. Her hands grip the cold metal hard, skin shredded from the wind and psoriasis. You wouldn't, Cody says, breath crystallizing instantaneously. Wah! Cricket shouts, hopping on the bars. The rubber soles of her ram boots make dull ringing against the metal, echo down the valley. I wonder how her feet aren't freezing in those things, mine aching ghost toes beneath flimsy rubber. You're drunk, Cody barks, but I don't know which of us he's talking to because we both are. Denial. I'm at the peak of states, which leaves me feeling vaguely continental. I think of Stephanie, passed out hours ago on Cody's couch, steely pupils bloodshot beneath drooping eyelids. Stephanie snoozing beneath the fray of an archaic Viking's blanket, lit cigarette killing itself, curling miserably beneath her fingers. Possibly drooling, exhausted from drinking and living off soda crackers and Summit and ribbons of organic dried fruit. Cody bought 12 cases of PBR at the beginning of the month. There are approximately two remaining, 3 days until refill. Typical. You wait, Cody says, pointing at me. You wait until next month. We're gonna have 3 less days to drink those cases. He staggers a little. For the love of banjos, this is gonna hit Canada come snow melt. For the love of banjos is my gig with Cody, Cricket, and Stephanie. Their metal strings, tender trills, plucked notes disintegrating in the cold of Cody's garage. Amnesiac groove jams with syrupy tempos and trudging blast beats. I wonder how I might achieve greater suspension. Cricket spins at the center of the fire tower, her mouth open, catching snowflakes in it. I jam my hands in my pockets, searching for a cigarette. I fidget to light it properly, teeth clicking madly in the glitter freeze. You called yet, bitch? Cricket says, leaning on Cody and stumbling. You such a bitch, Maticus. All that flow ride of living, you can't handle it. He's doing better than Greg, Cody says. Remember Greg? Pussy old drummer passed out on that ledge right over there. Greg vomiting, Stephanie shivering, her hair like a festival of smells, all treacherous caravans, old hairspray, acrid stale cigarette stench, greasy bangs pulled over the sheen of her pallid forehead. She even feels southern, the coldness and grit of her exterior. Hey, Cody sputters. Hey, the Dizzy Caribou is still open. Let's close it down. I knew things could only become colder, and when I held her, I felt as I do now, at increased altitudes. When I first met Stephanie smoking outside the Caribou, shivering in her parka, glossy pupils shining, disinterested as if she'd been kidnapped. I'd wanted to call her Persephone ever since, shrouded in the snow of northern Minnesota, a prisoner in the hell of eternal winter. Cody and Cricket link arms and clump down the metal stair. I flick my cigarette over the edge and lean, watch the orange tip descend to the frost below. Stephanie freezing in Hades, her skin turned purple and thatched pomegranates. Cars run a dickweed, Cody says. Lean far enough over that railing and you're out of the band. Yep.
That's the first half of International Falls from Tales from the Poor House. Join us next time for the second half. Thanks to CAMSU and the English department here at Mankato State University. See you next time.
Sitting on the porch, it's your words gonna light that torch. Tell it in a city park, tell it in a bar, tell it in the backseat of your grandma's car. No tales too pure, our failures lure. The poor house sure wants to hear what's bubbling.